Welcome to the Art and Science of Complex Sales. This is the Leadership Quarter. This is a podcast for revenue, sales, and go-to-market leaders and practitioners that is focused on bringing you insights from the best and brightest the world has to offer. The Leadership Quarter is focused on asking the critical questions. How do we develop and empower sales leaders to build strong cultures and teams to hit our growth goals? Experts from around the world give their experiences and opinions on this critical aspect of sales. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow on your favorite podcast platform. And let's dive in to introducing today's guests. Jermaine Edwards is a bit of a sales and business savant. He's got a British accent, so that word savant just seems to fit. But his experience backs it up. A successful sales executive across industries, a startup guru that has had some brilliant successes, and as he says, massive failures, and the creator of sales and business methodology that is proven to find gaps and increase revenues, Jermaine has had a heck of a career. Today, he shares learnings on sales leadership, the difference between earning and proving, the impact of cognitive load on how we sell, and how we show up for prospects and customers to provide true value. Let's get started today with Jermaine Edwards. Jermaine, welcome to the Art and Science of Complex Sales. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, you know, I'm doing well today, and thanks for inviting me, Paul. Excited for the conversation.
Absolutely. And I got to tell the audience, I am a little bit thrown here because I am outside of, I was all set to record with Jermaine and boom, I go up, I go hit the button and nothing starts upstairs in my, in my studio. So I'm on a mic that I don't, so I may be a bit off, but Jermaine, you are never off. So, it's one thing I've learned about you in our time together that, you just are on point and I really am appreciative of you spending the time with me. We're going to start with our normal question. When we talk about sales, when we talk about the art and science of complex sales, we need to start with a shared definition of sales. So, Jermaine, how do you define sales?
Well, clearly, is that there's a more traditional technical definition, which is exchange of goods and services. But I think today in the complex sales world, really it's the earned value you get from the identification of a problem and your proven ability to solve that problem.
Use a cool word there. The proven ability. And tell me a little bit more about that. That's a very cool word to use.
Yeah. So what I believe today is that more than anything, I think we're looking for, particularly customers are looking for the evidence of confidence. And so the way in which that is demonstrated could be multiple. We have case studies, we have reviews, we have testimonials and so forth. But more than anything, what we need to do is to demonstrate a path that shows the customer that we have not only been there before, but we have a unique appreciation of what it takes for them to get the result, not just what a past customer did. I think that's a distinction between earned and proven, is whether or not we can identify and articulate how we get you over the line, and not necessarily just how we have done other companies and got them over the line.
That's a great, I love that definition. I love where you're going with it. The proven, earned versus proven. And you use that term competence. I'm going to take this back to, there's a really good book by Stephen M. R. Covey. He talks about, it's The Speed of Trust, but he talks about character and competence being the two factors of trust. What I'm hearing you say is that you believe sales has moved into a point where we need to take away that indecision, we need to take away that insecurity they have of moving forward by proving competence, not necessarily just showing competence. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, indeed. I think a lot of companies can do that, and that's the kind of the fair exchange in the marketplace, is that a lot of companies are catching up with the capabilities and capacity to do that because of technology in many regards. And so the reality here is that we have to be able to, again, with a deep understanding of the customer, demonstrate our ability to take them over the line and not necessarily how we've done it for other people. Although that's important, but more than anything, I want to know, can you take me over the line to where we want to go?
It follows the theme of, I haven't heard anybody discuss it in that way, and I'm really appreciative of you bringing a new aspect to this, because I've asked this question a lot, but it does bring along this theme of personalization that has come so much in our culture, right? Don't just prove that this works. Prove that this works for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, this Netflix, I mean, it's the Netflix era, right? It's anything that you want to watch, you can. Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about, let's dive into your background, because you have an amazing background. Mm-hmm. You have built companies, sold companies, led sales, led operations. Let's dive into your background and really explore kind of how you got to this definition. And it's a definition that works because you're proving it in market with people. I mean, this is what you do or doing every day is helping CEOs do this. So share a little bit about how did Jermaine get started and let's go from there.
Yeah. So I think the reality is I started out sucking in sales and I was embarrassingly kind of let go of my first role and then began to get even more curious. I think that's part of my personality. Actually getting fired actually fired me up. And so over a 10-year period, I just became deeply curious about what made the difference in success between not only sales professionals and potential customers, but within suppliers and customers themselves. And so from that time, I just began to get very serious about development and much more curious, not necessarily just about what people did, but how people thought in that process or exchange in sales. And so what that led to was working for 3 or 4 different businesses, multiple sales and accounts teams, being in the trenches myself as a key account manager, as a sales rep, then leading some teams, commercial divisions, and saw the opportunities and challenges firsthand in being able to solve with the team and work with fairly complex companies. So I started from working with fairly global events businesses, running and managing multiple different events globally and the different needs for customers, working in a publishing company, working in finance for a little while, and primarily spending most of my time in executive education and helping businesses really kind of lead their teams well and develop for the future. But it was really in that last period of time in the executive education company that I began to look at some patterns that were there or take them more seriously. And that led to starting my first business while I was still in sales and writing my first book in 2016. And on doing that, what I began to see was clients come back to me say, hey, you know, the way you manage us, could you go and just show us, so our teams, how to do the same thing? And once I got the validation from my own clients that actually they were enjoying what I was doing, I got the confidence to really think about how I could help other people do the same. And it wasn't necessarily about doing what I did. It was actually about thinking what I thought, or teaching you how to think about something, not necessarily what to think. And that kind of led to, an explosion of varying different businesses from, gosh, you're placing medical and pharma practitioners into speaking and consulting roles, running an events company, a couple of consulting businesses, technology business. So 6 companies over a 7-8 year period, 2 exits, 2 very massive failures, and 2 running today. So I've got, it's the whole 9, you know, and gained experience with thousands of customer conversations, 150 different growth projects across multiple countries and industries. And all of that pain, all that failed success has kind of led me to this particular point of, I think, a heightened certainty that what is needed today more than ever is a much more systematic approach to understanding the principles and psychology that drives how we do anything. And that's what I apply today in helping people to think more pragmatically about is a systematic approach. It's looking at the business that you have and saying, how do we engineer higher degrees of certainty in the things that we do without taking away the autonomy of that personalization that's needed for an individual?
And so sales and revenue is really just one part of that, right? We're looking, we've talked about that pretty extensively, where how you're able to look at the whole system and start to do that. And at the heart of it, let me ask, I guess, this question. At the heart of it is really how you define sales, though. How are you taking that personalization and proving again and again to that customer that's actually giving you money throughout the whole process that you are serving them more effectively? Am I right? Like that's foundational to your approach, I think. Oh,
absolutely. No, it is. And so when I consider those particular aspects of earning and proving, what tends to come to mind is like, you know, the principle of Amazon, right? So you have, when you're out searching for a product, and it's probably one of the most common examples that I offer, and you go do extensive research, but you go to Amazon, and then you begin to look for evidence, right? And that evidence is really kind of computated in different ways. So one is you look for how many people have talked about this. And then you go to the quality feedback on what people think about this. And then you begin to rationalize the middle, meaning what is the degree of risk I'm willing to take based on the number of people and the quality of comments of people. Because reality is no one company is going to have outstanding reviews with everybody they've ever had any contact with. The question is, how do we begin to reduce the risk level perceived in the external market, but also when we communicate with other people? Because the reality is that there's a degree of risk that anybody is taking to come into your business, regardless of what it is, no matter how many people have actually worked with you, and the degree and quality feedback that you receive. Those things matter. But what matters even more is how the person thinks about those two things. And what I found to be true is that if we think about those internal questions that somebody is going to ask when they look at those things externally and in conversation, we're going to have more control over what we influence, what we can influence in the moment.
I read a book. I did this interview last year. A group book came out last year. It's called The Jolt Effect. It talks very heavily about indecision. Are you familiar with that?
I've not read that book. Actually, I'm thinking of a different book altogether, but yes, go ahead.
Well, I highly recommend it. The guys did just a great job based on a ton of research and market, and they focused it really around B2B sales and kind of framing that gap between have you earned the right to be looked at, and the have you proven this to me that you can execute, is that layer of indecision, right? And there's that extra layer now that we get with so many comments and feedback and everything that's coming from us. What Jolt Effect really talked about was, you know, indecision is the greatest barrier today. It's not no decision, it's indecision, right? It's the fact that I can't make this decision. Organizationally and personally, we get frozen many times, right? And I just think of the scrolling on Amazon and that type of stuff. There's so much information overload. I guess there is that difference between earning the right for a view and earning the right for a audience versus proving that you can, you know, and that gap in there becomes that indecision. Is that accurate, or am I way off base?
No, absolutely. Look, I tend to also read externally to that. So I've been a big proponent of reading things around applied and behavioral economics. So like Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow, which talks about really kind of the process of how we move to any kind of emotional to logic decision. What I found to be true is that definitely I agree with the indecision part. I think there is this kind of cognitive load. If you've ever heard of the phrase cognitive load, but essentially it's just about what you talked about, which is we receive all this information. What tends to happen is that we actually, even when given all this information, we still move to our own justified position. That justified position is often the indecision, because I now cannot make a decision because I don't know how to determine what is good and what isn't. And I think that is, if we can, just going back to helping people discern the middle and understand what the risk is from an education point of view, if we can help a company or a customer, I should say, or a prospect, what it might be, understand the process of making the decision, what some of the risks are in making a decision, not necessarily the risk in not making a decision, but the risk in what to include in understanding how to make the decision. There's a difference between the two. I think where you begin to open up what I call kind of possibilities. And possibilities are really the vehicle for greater exploration. So if you find the conversations that you're having is more about justifying the risk and not necessarily about exploring the possibilities, then I think what you find yourself really in an activity trap, which you're trying to, or justification trap. You're trying to justify these things. And the more you try to justify something, here's what happens, is that unfortunately people just get more entrenched in their own beliefs. Because now you're talking about yourself and not necessarily about where they are. And so I find that to be true for a lot of salespeople. They think what they're doing in presenting case studies and presenting their value proposition is they're talking about or talking for or to the customer. What they're really doing is talking about themselves. You know, they're talking about the possibilities for their business. So if I'm speaking to somebody, I'm saying, hey, I noticed that there's a market downturn. And somebody's going, you know, I don't want to make a decision in this particular downturn. And so we try to justify. We say, well, actually, what many of our customers have doing is that they don't care. What they care is what does it necessarily mean for me to make? What are the possibilities here? So you may change your language. You may say, hey, you know, I really understand that. So the question is, what kinds of things are you actually trying to do within the context of this downturn? What would you like to be true? But what you're trying to make possible or true within the context of this downturn? I'm curious about that. And then they start to open up again. And so we're expanding the conversation from justification to possibilities. I think that's the shift that I find I'm asking people to really consider.
Justification to possibilities. Well, and how does that tie into this idea of kind of this earning versus proving? Like, justification? Yeah. Like, tell me a little bit about more, because these are two concepts that I think tie together real well.
Let me kind of offer a definition here. So when you're in justification, what you're attempting to do is to convince, not influence. Mm. Possibilities is about influence, because what's happening is influence is about helping somebody to do something that they already want to do. As a convincing, it's about you trying to get somebody to do something that you want them to do. And so the shift between in earning versus proving is that we're proving through possibilities, meaning that we're opening up and saying, hey, a number of our customers have actually gone and done this thing. However, we recognize also that your business is quite unique in what they do. So here's how we make adjustments for things that are really important for you.
Which immediately de-risks the proposition.
Exactly. So we don't just go, so we still go here, because what we want to do is to demonstrate a level of capability or competency, but then we move immediately into this place of possibility with this individual. So here's how we make adjustments for very unique organizations like you. And we begin to what I call values label. And values labeling is really interesting concept. I learned from a book called by Stuart Diamond called Getting More. I think it's called Getting More, something by Stuart Diamond. It's a negotiations book. But values labeling is really interesting. This is what we do is we place a value on the person's ability to make a decision. So I say, hey, Mr. Prosser, I know you're somebody who really values making decisions or making the right kind of decision. I know you're somebody who really wants to do a great job for your business and ensure that what you propose to your peers and to your board is going to be met with open arms. Is that right? Yeah. Okay. So let's have a conversation that helps you to say yes to this in a way in which you'll feel confident proposing to your business.
So you're taking, and this is fascinating, because this to me is I start to meld. Mm. And this is where you start to meld the seller's journey with the buyer journey there, right? And that is exactly that concept when you start to co-create that value together. But this is a very unique, I love it. And I know you've developed a framework around this that you're bringing to companies, right?
That is correct. Yeah, helping customers to take the leap with you. It's called LEAP, the LEAP program. And so, I'm a big proponent of having individualized, systematic conversations that are designed to move a customer through a natural buying process that includes a seller engagement. So they're buying with you and not without you.
Well, I look, because there is, I don't know how much time you spend on the sales forums on LinkedIn and that type of stuff, but there's a very vocal camp that talks about there is no such thing as a sales process anymore. It's all about the buyer. And then there's another vocal camp that very says, there's buyers need to be able to taught to buy, essentially. So you have to have a very distinct sales process. What we're talking about here, and I love it because it's actually very conceptually very close to how we operate, is the being able to have a sales process that you are so comfortable and confident with that helps somebody outline their vision and seek possibilities and apply that, prove that we can apply that to their process. So we're tying together and co-creating value with that buyer. So it becomes a one and the same. But both people need to opt into that. That's one thing that I find that's difficult about that. How do you make that leap? How do you teach salespeople to lead in that way and make that leap back to leap to be able to gain that agreement that, okay, we are working on this together, seller, buyer, we're doing it together. There's got to be a, I don't know if there's a secret or if it's just a level of trust or a level of competency that you'd have to develop, but can you dive into that a little bit?
Yeah. So I think it starts first of all, rather than what we do, it's how we think about any engagement itself. So we go back to the concept of a principle, which is a thinking model, a way in which we approach anything based on the concepts that what we believe to be true about an engagement. So there's a particular principle that I teach, it's a principle of problems. And essentially it says that you get access to the level of problem you're trying to solve. And so what tends to happen is within the engagement with a customer is that we tend to focus on the problems that we believe we can solve rather than look for the actual problem the customer wants to solve.
State that again, because that is a brilliant one-liner that I think I'm going to title the episode on. We get access to the problems that we are...
So we get access to the level of problems we're trying to solve. So there are different levels of problems that you could go in and engage your customer with that actually then gets them more and more engaged because of the level of problem or the level of risk or level of outcome that comes from that. But the reality is in our conversations, we're often trying to focus on a problem we believe we can solve rather than actually looking to the customer on the things that they actually want to solve, for the things they actually want to solve. And so that is the first level, is that we have to get really critical about what we're hearing from the customer. Am I hearing something because I believe that's something we can solve, or am I actually looking for the thing that they actually want to solve? And that's very nuanced. It is. Because the reality is that we're taught as salespeople to look for the proposition based on the things that we do. We have a product list, we have use cases, and that's what I want you to go and think about. But actually, what it does, it closes down the conversation in many regards. And so what you want to do is, yes, present your value proposition. Hey, this is what we do best in the marketplace. That's absolutely true. But the reality is that the customer, when they're speaking to you, they may see a completely different problem to you. And you may have heard that problem before. And it, therefore, in your mind, you're like, well, I can't conceptualize how our product can do it. Therefore, I'm going to force them down a different path. And that is the surefire way to kind of get disengagement with the customer. You're trying to move them down a path that they don't actually want to go. They're not committed to that particular problem at all. Or it's such a low-level problem that you've actually identified, it's unlikely they're going to get you any executive buy-in at all. They'll just push you down to where they are and operate at that level. And this leads to a different principle, which is you get sent to who you sound like. And so the principle of that is that, you know, if you're communicating at a certain level of problem and you're speaking to a line manager and you find it really difficult for them to move you up, it's likely because you don't sound like somebody who could actually add value in that area.
Those both tie into one thing that I really want to focus on for a little bit, which is it's really about building sales leaders. The connection between those two questions, the ability to operate within a moment, right? Is a highly learned skill, but I think it's one that's intimately connected to the ability to self-lead and the ability to lead others. That's my opinion on it. I'm not sure. Is that something that you see in market? Are the people that are able to do this as you training them, are they actually, as you transform that, how they sell through Leap, and you're building these principles into them, are they actually leading themselves more effectively in everything? Are they building better cultures? I don't know. Can you dive on that a little bit? Hopefully that question makes sense. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out the right way to ask it.
The most difficult thing you could ask a human being to do is to change their habits.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And so there is very much so a cultural system or a framework of thinking that needs to be dealt with first. And that's pretty much where I spend most of my time, is really thinking about how we help them change rather than help. And I think there's a difference between how we help them to do something different rather than behave something different. So getting something to do something and follow a process is really easy, but behavior is something much more entrenched. It's really about the beliefs we hold as well that drives some of those behaviors. And so we have to get to a beliefs level and a value system that encourages, supports, and advocates for that kind of thinking. And so the first thing I do is work with leaders on, hey, look, let's just think about what we're thinking about. And in thinking about what we're thinking about, what we're not doing necessarily saying we need to upend all that we do. We're simply asking the question, what would need to be true in our business for us to get 5, 4, 10 times the results that we're getting? Do we believe we can do that in the current framework of how we operate? Looking objectively at the numbers, so what we convert and those things. If the answer is no, then it's likely we need to move back through the system that we have and start to think differently about those pieces. And that's where we begin. We always start with results, because the reality is that the growth that we want will be determined by our ability to get high degrees of certainty in the areas that we can control. And we can't do that.
The growth that we want. I'm going to be repeating a lot of the lines you say here.
That's fine.
They're hitting me pretty hard. The growth that we want.
The growth that we want is going to be determined in getting high degrees of certainty in the areas that we can control. And so if in the places that we can control, we are not getting high degrees of certainty across our business in the areas themselves, then we have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to then go back through the system and begin to ask some questions that challenge our approach to those things. And it could not necessarily just what we do, but how we behave and believe about those things. And that's where I begin with people. So you have to start with principles. I always start with principles. Hey, what is the framework of thinking that defines and shapes how we engage any prospect or any customer? You know, if you could name some principles, what would it be? And people would say, oh, yeah, it's value first. Well, what does value first mean? Define it for me. How would you behave that out? What would your team need to be able to do that? What is the principle there? And most people just don't have a framework of thinking that supports, again, how you then approach or behave out certain things in the sales process. And I think we miss that. We're teaching people what to do. We're teaching them what to think, but not necessarily how to think. And that is the big problem.
So one of the things I've seen is there's this gap between setting up a process and actually, and that's where most people think that the magic happens. There is a lot of magic in that. And I see it in our system. We are the best in the world at actually creating sales processes and giving tools to actually follow that process. We do that really, really well. But the people that make the magic with our system, as well as those that I've coached and gone out and dealt with in market, are those that, like you said, they focus on the why. They know the why really, really well, and that belief. They know the belief in that why that can then translate down to a team that can then execute through the process to then pull in customers. One without the other, you can gain a... You just put in a process and you force people to follow it, you're going to gain
some results.
You're going to get some results.
Absolutely.
But you never optimize it. And I'm hearing you talk about start at the beginning to optimize the whole darn thing. So when you start to talk with leaders about this, what are the type of reactions that you get? Like, do you get a bunch of pushback? Oh, no, we're doing this perfect. You know, we're doing this great. We're, you know, hey, just come in and sell and fix my process. Yeah. I don't need to look at the top end.
A lot of skepticism. Initially, they tend to want to solve the thing in front of them. Oh, they just need, better, question asking training. They just need, and those things can be true, but it's not a root. It doesn't really attack the kind of root cause. Like, so getting somebody to ask better questions is actually not that difficult, to be honest. It's not that difficult. However, getting somebody to behave different throughout an entire system or process is slightly different, because what happens is when you have multiplicity of customers and you have different challenges that are thrown at you throughout a sales process. What you lean on in that point of view is either what you've been coached, what you've experienced, or you've been learning independently throughout those things that you've learned. So these things are coming out. What you've been coached, what you've experienced, meaning you're drawing from your own experience of what you did last week, yesterday, what it might be, or the things that you're learning independently, meaning you're building your own outside of the current system that you're in. So you're watching YouTube videos, you're your own personal development. So they're leaning on one of those three things. Ideally, what you want to do is to have the coaching on the systems itself be the predominant thing that supports them, because the reality is they're not going to have experience in every single scenario that shows up. It's just not going to be there. So they have to fall back to their level of coaching, which should be designed in helping them to think better and not just do things better. Because the latter follows the other. If they can think better, they'll do things better. It doesn't quite follow the other way around.
Fundamentally, why you start with principles.
Fundamentally, why I start with principles every single time before moving to what I call growth mapping and then to the actual conversations themselves. There's a sequential place that you have to move people to. And those principles are fundamental. If I know if I approach a conversation, and in that conversation, I know the principle that I get sent to who I sound like, I'm going to change the way I communicate and the language that I use. If I know that the level of problem, I get access to the level of problem that I solve, I'm going to think much more intently about the largest and most important, bigger problem I can solve for the customer that is important and recognized to them. These principles shape the way I approach those engagements.
So you're teaching people to systematically think based on principles and then giving them a process by which they can create value and engage with customers throughout
those things.
Throughout every single part of the revenue cycle, which is truly every single part of the business. I love this stuff. So how do people find you, Jermaine, when they want to get in touch with Jermaine? Like, how do they, and they get interested on this, how do they find you and how do you work with individuals?
Yeah, so that's actually changing quite a bit. So I'm actually just about to go through a sale of a business right now where some of that high-level consulting work was happening. But today they can find me directly if you go to JermaineEdwards.com. You can find a list of services that are there. But the actual LEAP program was actually exclusive only to my customers and to an executive program I was running with a couple of business schools. Mm-hmm. In March, will be the first time I offer this publicly to everyone.
Wow.
So it's actually going to be available publicly for everyone. So all my clients have really got the unique kind of exclusive view of this. And they actually said, well, Jermaine, do you have to make this public? They've actually asked me this. I'm like, well, yeah, kind of. I kind of want to move the business forward a little bit. So yes, it's happening in March, digital course, and then kind of broadening that out to some workshops I'll be delivering over the course of this year. But I think personally, and again, there's very few things new under the sun. What I'm attempting to do is to bring things that have always been in existence for business into a much clearer framework and system and process to go and adopt and adapt to very easily in their business. I don't think these things are necessarily revolutionary. What I do believe is that they are transformational.
I hear they're tried, tested, and transformational because you've done them, right? Mm-hmm. You've applied them, and now you're releasing them. That's going to be a fascinating journey for you, man. I'm pretty pumped for you when you start to release this to the world. So how are you doing that? Are you doing that through courses, through individual connection with people, through how do they, are they going to be able to get access?
Yeah, so starting with a digital course. Then I'll be running a few different mastermind and masterclass sessions throughout the year. So once a quarter, I'll be running live events here in the US and also in Europe as well. So we'll be dovetailing two things at a time. So people can literally sign their teams up to come to a live public workshop. Or if they want to do something more private, I actually do have a members community where I'm saying, well, look, rather than just me coming to you, well, why not necessarily, why don't we just create a system where actually you're engaging with me on a more regular basis. I'm never somebody who believes in just a one and done opportunity, but the reason why I put the masterclasses together is to give people an opportunity to test it in real time. Mm-hmm. So on the actual workshops, I was doing one yesterday, I get people to actually make sales calls or a customer call in the class. So say, hey, okay, we have this. Who here has a customer call coming up soon? Almost everybody puts their hands up because everybody makes a call at lunchtime, right? And so I said, okay, so for the first 15 minutes, as you go to make this call, I want you to go and apply this thing. And then after lunch, everybody comes back and they'll go, tell me how it went. And then we kind of move to that next phase. So they get a chance to just experience it in real time. And then when they go back to their business, they go, you know, I think we need this entire thing. And then they come and they buy the course and they move on from there.
That's great stuff. One of the things I'm super excited about too is the marriage of, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, but the marriage of your stuff and then connecting to Membrane and the process. Cause process, man, like it starts exciting. To become, like we talked about it, it becomes alive when you have a true framework and a belief in it. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it's a dead process. Right. And so when you start to do that and that's where I see the transformation in companies, and we see it. I'm in a position that I get to see it every day, which is amazing because I get, we have multiple partners, we have multiple, but it's truly when you find that belief, when you get a team that is led by someone that they truly believe in B2B sales and finding that strong methodology and the principles that their company's going to operate on, tying that to effective, repeatable processes that they can do all the time, and then technology that actually helps them do that. Holy mackerel, you just see, like you said, transformation. So I'm so pumped about that. And
super excited.
It's going to be, it's going to be amazing. So, hey, I'm going to let you close us out. Do you have any, based on our conversation, before I give the whole final closing spiel, do you have anything that you're seeing in market today or you're feeling that is just, you need the opportunity to just give it to the audience right now? Any words of wisdom, anything that you're seeing, anything that you're feeling that you just absolutely have to share?
Yeah, so I'll say this, is that I know there is a particular move to over automate in many areas when it comes to our customers or looking at those areas. So what I'm going to encourage people to do is to hold on to a particular phrase I learned some years ago, which is to automate the predictable but humanize the exceptional parts in the business. And so I want you to really think about the places in the business, your business today, where a human interaction will provide something deeply more enriching and exceptional. And I want you to go deeper and double down on that even more this year.
We could go for another hour just because you just said that. That's so in line with my thinking. And I thank you for sharing that, because there's this tendency to want everybody to go AI and over automate I think investing in people is going to I think it's going to be the differentiator this year. So absolutely believe that.
Yep, 100%. So I just want to advocate that, and I'm continuing to do that. Whereas I still believe, obviously, in measures of automation, but do it around the areas that are more predictable in nature, and really double down on the humanizing experience and helping your teams do that, and really doubling down on it. I mean, tripling down on what that might look like.
That's amazing. With that, we'll leave the show for today. Thank you so much, everybody. Jermaine Edwards, check him out on LinkedIn. Make sure, this course is going to be groundbreaking. I'm super excited for the release. And so make sure you're checking that out, checking out Jermaine on LinkedIn and everywhere else you can find him. Thank you so much for being on. And with that, we'll close out the episode. Yeah, we'll close out the episode for today. Shine bright, everybody. Have an amazing day.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the Art and Science of Complex Sales. Please take a moment, like, subscribe, share this podcast on all your favorite platforms, and let's get the word out. This podcast is proud to be brought to you by Membrane.com. We are the world's top B2B sales platform. And in the world of B2B sales, with everything from prospecting to business acquisition to managing complex growth, Membrane has the right size technology for your sales team. Our latest innovation, the Coaching Cockpit, empowers your leaders, managers, and team with the information and tools they need to take their skills to the next level and to take advantage of the exponential power of effective sales coaching. With our technology and the top
team of sales partners around the world, Membrane is helping to achieve our driving vision. This is, quite simply, elevating the sales profession. To learn more, find us at www.membrane.com. That is M-E-M-B-R-A-I-N.com, or contact us via email at sales@membrane.com. Keep shining bright and have a wonderful day.